the real turning point for me in understanding my migraines was, are they here to prioritize me, protect me, or punish me? And realizing that it was the only time that I was taken out away from my life and given 24 hours in a dark room made me realize that actually I was prioritizing myself by having the migraine. Well, I know it seems like such a small thing, but sometimes it takes taking yourself outside of the life that you live in to reflect on something in a completely new way to realize what we're actually doing for ourselves. We have such an enormous amount of wisdom within our body that we just don't tap into because life's happening and you're just on the so fast all the time that we don't stop and think and notice, what is my body trying to tell me?
Welcome to the Inspired to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. How many times have you said yes when you meant no? Smiled through the exhaustion or prioritized everyone else's needs while your own migraines, anxieties, or burnout whispered louder and louder in the background? I'm Phoebe Lay, and today on Inspired to Thrive and Shine, I am sitting down with Polly Angel, a rapid transformational therapy practitioner, somatic trauma-informed coach, and founder of The Angel Path. Polly spent years looking like she had it all together on the outside whilst battling chronic migraines and people-pleasing patterns that were slowly draining her from the inside out. Then she discovered RTT therapy, experienced a profound transformation, and realized something powerful. Our limiting beliefs aren't permanent. They're just old stories we can rewrite. In this conversation, we are diving into why women especially struggle with chronic people-pleasing, how our emotions aren't problems to fix, but wisdom to listen to, the revolutionary Meet Your Inner Team emotional intelligence system, which Polly created for children and adults, why understanding your subconscious mind is the ultimate superpower, and the generational patterns we unknowingly pass down and how to break them. So whether you're exhausted from putting everyone else first, raising children and want to equip them differently, or you're simply ready to befriend your emotions instead of battling them, this episode will give you permission to prioritize yourself without the guilt. So let's dive right in. Hey, Polly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's absolutely lovely to have you. And wow, what a topic to cover for us today. I'd love to know if you could take us back to the moment, given what you do now, was there a pivotal moment where you realized something had to change?
Yeah. So for me, there was a massive light bulb moment actually in my late teens when I was really struggling. You know, we all struggle as teenagers, but for me, I did have a lot of mental health issues. I just struggled with the pressure that really I put on myself. So back then, I was an international competitor in the equestrian world. And, you know, I really always was trying to outdo my last thing, my last event. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to always be better, always do more. And it was solely put from myself. It wasn't my parents at all. They just loved that I was happy doing what I was doing. But, you know, it's the pressure that I put on myself led me down a road of nothing was ever good enough. And consequently, I ended up going to the doctors looking for help because I was just sad all the time, found myself crying all the time. So I was then put on a medication, an antidepressant, which a few weeks later, I discovered I wasn't getting any better. I went back to the doctors and they decided to double the dosage of my prescription.
Wow.
It wasn't until I got home that I thought, this is crazy. This hasn't made any difference to me. And now they want to double it. So that for me was a huge light bulb moment. That was when I decided there's got to be another way for me and looked into actually hypnotherapy, NLP, CBT techniques, you know, ways that I could help myself rather than give the job to somebody else to fix. And that was the real empowering point. I didn't realize at that time quite how it would affect my life now. But because I learned those things, I got out of that dark time in my life. And then later on, I had the challenges of being a mum to three kids and all those challenges that the motherhood brings. And that's a challenge. That's a massive challenge in life. And I found myself going back to all these old tools that I used in my early life. So that's when it really took another level for me, because while I used all the books, so I wasn't actually able to do RTT when I was young. I did all the other things and I've read all the books. So Marissa Peer, the creator of RTT, is a fantastic woman and I've always followed her. Back in those days, it was all the books. So I would read the books and listen to the audios to help me. And it was only more recently that I learned that she trained her in this modality, because back when I was young, she didn't train in the modality. So now she did. That's when I decided, right, there's just a no-brainer. This is such a powerful product. I would love to be able to do this for other people.
Wow, that's amazing. And it sounds like from then on, a lot has changed. And the breaking point that led you to RTT therapy, which I'd love to know more about. Like, firstly, what is RTT therapy?
So it stands for Rapid Transformational Therapy. It's a hypnotherapy combined with CBT and NLP techniques, but it's all in one session. The wonderful thing about it, it is rapid, it is transformational, and you can change so many things in one session. The power of one session. In hypnotherapy, originally used to take a long time. Like the whole induction process used to be like a 40-minute process. And Marissa Peer was like, people don't actually have time for this. People, have fast-paced lives, and the only way they're going to see results is if we make this quicker. And she devised this RTT approach, which means that you can have one session. And the wonderful thing is, following a session, is you actually get a bespoke audio that you then listen to, which rewires your mind with the positive thoughts you want to think. In the session, we remove the limiting belief that's holding you back, which normally a belief is created between the ages of 0 and 8 years old. So we carry these things around and they become what we think is our identity, but it's actually just a conditioned, practiced belief that's doesn't actually need to stay with you. You can remove it and then rewire in these wonderful new beliefs, which is why there's one session followed by the audio for 30 days rewires your brain.
Wow. Walk us through your first RTT session. What were your thoughts before you walked in and what happened? What did you discover about yourself that you didn't know before that session?
Well, I was really keen to dial into why I was having migraines, because I did have debilitating migraines. And I experienced RTT with Marissa on a retreat. So what happened was, it was actually a group of women all having RTT at the same time. And the real turning point for me in understanding my migraines was, are they here to prioritize me, protect me, or punish me? And realizing that it was the only time that I was taken out away from my life and given 24 hours in a dark room made me realize that actually I was prioritizing myself by having the migraine. So that was powerful. I know it seems like such a small thing, but sometimes it takes taking yourself outside of the life that you live in to reflect on something in a completely new way, to realize what we're actually doing for ourselves, because we have such an enormous amount of wisdom within our body that we just don't tap into, because life's happening and you're just on the so fast all the time that we don't stop and think and notice, what is my body trying to tell me? And I understood then that I need to make sure that I give myself that time, quiet time, downtime, a little bit of me time away from the children sometimes, to be able to continue and regulate myself, you know?
You've talked about befriending your emotions as well, rather than fighting them. And I'd love to know, what does that actually look like in practice? And how did you shift from seeing emotions as a problem and a barrier to seeing them as your guides?
Well, I had the most profound experience actually when I was training in my RTT. So I was having a tough week because of all sorts of other issues going on in my life. And I actually found myself having a conversation with one of the trainers at the RTT school and, you know, saying, I just can't stop crying. I can't manage myself well. And she sat me down for 10 minutes and taught me the methodology. It's called internal family systems. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Wonderful system, because it's just about noticing all the different parts of yourself. So what happened was, I was sat there and she was telling me, okay, so find the part of you that won't stop crying. Ask that part, you know, what it's trying to do for you, or basically comfort that part. And when I understood the reason for it being there, and I could identify that there were more than one part, there was a scared part, an angry part, there's all these different little emotions. And the powerful moment came the following morning when I was preparing for my RTT exam and I started getting numb fingers, which is the first sign of a migraine for me. And I also started getting an anxiety attack, which I had never had in my life before. So I've got these both things happening on the morning of my exam. And I think, oh my God. So I'd learnt this therapy the day before, the concept of talking to my parts. And in that moment, I stopped. I asked the part of me that's creating a migraine what it's trying to do for me. And I mean, it's quite obvious, really. I had an exam. I hadn't done an exam for so many years, and I really didn't enjoy school in that way. And the part just wanted to take me away from the stress of the day, you know, and rescue me and not have to face all this stress. So I asked the part, I realize what you're trying to do for me and I love you for that, but can you help me? I know it sounds bonkers, but can you help me? Can you support me in another way? Can you help me to stay calm? Can you help me to remember my words and all that kind of stuff? And within moments, I did exactly the same with the anxiety part as well. And within moments, both things stopped. And I have never, ever been able to stop a migraine once it was in flow before. So,
Yeah,
which is why we're out of the world, because we can do this on ourselves. That's what's so fascinating about it. It doesn't take much knowledge. You know, I had 10 minutes the day before learning about it. I used it the next day and it had such great power.
It does. Now that you say that, I think it reminds me of moments when I lose things and I misplace things and I don't know why I've misplaced it. It's really, really annoying. And it's always when I'm just about to get out the door or like kind of a stressful moment. And sometimes I actually stop. And now that I heard you say this, I think maybe I have been practicing talking to some of my parts without even realizing that this is actually a full-on technique. But I would say to myself, what is it that you're trying to tell me? Or what is it that you're doing? Or why have I lost this thing? Would you mind just maybe sharing some insights as to why that is? And even that act of stopping and asking my subconscious mind that question, believe it or not, it's always like within 60 seconds that I'll find that thing again. And it's like I just needed to just stop and talk to a part. And I feel like you're right. Our parts sometimes want to just either slow us down or give us some kind of insight. And it's really, really interesting the way the brain works.
Well, yeah, because you're also accessing your subconscious mind, which knows exactly where you left that thing because it remembers everything. It's just our conscious mind that doesn't. So, but just taking that moment that you take, I think quite often it's almost like a nervous system regulation technique as well, because sometimes when we're so like high and doing all the things, it's like, hold on, you need to just settle everything down so you can hear the information your body is trying to send you or your subconscious mind is trying to tell you. It's like this reset, and then you go, okay, actually, let me just calm down, let me ask the parts or recognize the information that my subconscious mind has, you know.
I totally agree. And I also think that a lot of the time we ignore that information. I also wanted to talk about people-pleasing and the people-pleasing patterns that arise in people. Why do you think, especially women, that we struggle with chronic people-pleasing patterns? And is this something that happens because of conditioning or survival or a bit of both? Like, where does it come from?
So we learn when we're very young how to get love from our loved ones and how to be noticed, how to be recognized. And it's a very simple thing, really, that we're realizing that we're getting the love that we need when we do things for others. And that way it becomes entrenched within who we are. It becomes a pattern that has got us what we needed, which is the love and the recognition.
So what's the cost of people pleasing and why is it so hard for people to break free from it?
Well, we're seeing now evidence that the cost is things like autoimmune disease. Autoimmune disease is 80% in women, which it's just, it goes hand in hand with the characteristics of women. You know, we are always trying to keep everybody happy as, you know, nurturers that we are. That becomes our role. And if we have also the tendency to have done that as we grew up as well, then it just perpetuates. And the problem with that is we put our own needs aside for others. We always become the bottom of the pile. And it's almost like with autoimmune disease, our body starts turning in and attacking ourselves. We're not listening to it. And I do believe it's our body's way of waking us up to recognize that this is not serving us anymore. And this is the problem with limiting beliefs, is they did serve us at some point. And this is where there's sort of quite a lot of conflict in our mind, because it did serve us when we were 4 years old, 6 years old. It just doesn't serve us anymore. And that's why, I don't know about with you in Australia, but in the UK, there has been quite a stigma around therapy. And you stiff up a lip and we don't need, it's a weakness to go and have therapy. But the great thing about RTT is it's not long-term therapy. It doesn't have to be something that you do, you start and then you never stop, you know, which I think is the understanding that we as Brits have of like people in America, you know, everybody does it. But everybody could benefit from it, because how many of us have got outdated beliefs when we were children that just, they worked for a 7-year-old, they don't work for a 37-year-old. And we're just actually running ourselves into a ground and potentially creating autoimmune diseases for ourselves by behaving this way. But the change is such a fear as well, you know, to do something about this, first of all, knowing you can do something about it, knowing you can change in some way, because you know, if you believe that's who you are, that's how you were made, that, you know, then just even having the insight that that belief doesn't need to be who you are anymore, you can change. But then the whole stigma around change, that's a challenge in itself, right?
I think over the years, I've definitely started to discover that there is a difference between being kind and being a people pleaser. And I think that it's something that is becoming more and more distinctive and more easy as it, you know, as with anything that you practice, any muscle that you exert, it starts to grow. So when you're in your teens or your 20s, breaking free from people pleasing feels really, really hard and icky. And the first time you say no to someone, whether it's a friend's birthday or helping someone with their homework, feels really extremely uncomfortable, especially if you were never taught that in your families or growing up. And I think over time, we start to see our friends show examples of that. I remember in my 20s, seeing my friends say no to events, to showing up to catch-ups and reunions. And I started to realize that saying no was actually becoming more and more of a thing. And this was over 10 years ago. And now I think people are a lot more aware, and that even the term people pleaser, someone saying, you're being a people pleaser, or I'm being a people pleaser, or it was my inner people pleaser that said that or did that, it's become normal. So I love that this is now becoming part of the conversation.
But also as well, you know, what you said made me think about what we see in our mothers or our caregivers. If we see that and we copy, don't we? As children, we copy what we see. And if, you know, I had a very much people-pleasing mum, and so I emulated that too. So that was normal. And I agree, it's so good that people are talking about it now and the awareness is so much greater. I think our parent didn't have the education we're so blessed to have now. And the other word that is now commonplace that I didn't know anything about what it was boundaries. I didn't know that there was such a thing that I could have a boundary or that I needed to respect a boundary. And learning that was a big journey for me.
Yeah, I think that setting boundaries is something that people will continuously learn to do, especially people pleasers. And a lot of women do struggle with boundaries. Some are fantastic. I'm not saying everybody's like this. There are some that are absolutely fantastic. And one clear example is, so I do Latin dancing where we go to socials and after every song, we dance with a new dance partner who will come up and usually grab your hand and ask if you would like to dance. And I remember talking to a friend who's German, who has been raised in a very different environment, different communication style to me. And she told me that when she gets asked by certain guys that she finds a bit creepy or just she feels uncomfortable with, or they were just maybe not very, you know, where she felt a bit uncomfortable during the dance, she would no longer want to dance with them. And we would actually sit in my car on our way to dance and say, okay, well, how are you going to actually say that you don't want to dance with this person? And I would say my version of a script that I had practiced and say, okay, this is what I'm going to say. And she would say hers, and it would be a lot more blunt, a lot more direct. And I remember saying, is that all you're going to say? You're just going to say like, no, I don't want to dance with you. And she's like, yes, that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to explain it. I'm just going to say, no, I don't want to dance with you. And I remember feeling like that was so bizarre and difficult for me, who grew up with a bit more people-pleasing tendencies, to be so direct, because my version was more like, oh, I'm good, I'm taking a break, or, you know, I'm just going to sit this one out. And so I'm just wondering, like, why is it that some women, I mean, maybe I've already answered it myself in the cultural thing, but like, why is it that some women really struggle with this? And I guess, what can we do to set better boundaries or be less people-pleasing?
I think it really depends on the person, like you say, but one of the things that comes to mind when you give that explanation is that I would be exactly like you. I'd be so concerned about the other person's feelings and how they were going to react to it. And I wouldn't want to hurt their feelings. So I think because I am quite a sensitive empath, that's how I've lived my life, always worrying about what impact I was going to have on somebody else. And that runs deep for me. I had a real strong reaction to what you were saying. But equally, you know, we've all made different. And that's why there are people pleasers, but there's also other people that have all sorts of other problems that are not, you know, not in the same spectrum at all. But yeah, I can only relate to my real experience of people pleasing, and that I'm sure it's because I'm so concerned about other people, the way other people feel. And I know as well, I think from being a little girl, you know, I really hated being upset by other people. So I then chose to go out of my way to not make other people feel how I'd felt. But I think a lot of people don't have that depth of feeling. We're all different.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's similar to myself, where as a little girl, I know what it was like to feel left out when I changed schools or when I was no longer around my own community and my family and my relatives. And I was the new girl, and I've been the new girl in 4 different schools. And so I feel like I never want other people to feel the way I did. So I'm a bit more nice about things, but I've also, like, a bit of a change in topic, but I've also discovered that there's a link between people pleasing and perfectionism. And I don't know if you've noticed that, but I feel like there's some kind of link. And I don't know if it's that they're two sides of the same coin or, you know, two of the same side of a coin, but on different coins. But yeah, I feel like that a lot of also high achieving, successful women seem to also struggle with people pleasing and boundaries. Not all, again, this isn't all of them, but yeah, I've noticed that perfectionism, high achievers and people that are just more strong towards success seem to struggle a bit more with this issue.
Yes, I totally agree. That is one of my, I would say that's probably my number one strong part. Perfectionism is really a thing for me. And I'm very creative. And I think quite often creativity goes hand in hand with the perfectionism, you know, and also the emotional. Again, this is very much my opinion because of my experience, but I'm very creative. I am highly perfectionist. And you know, I actually, in recent years, I've been working on being comfortable with done is enough. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect, because the problem with perfectionism is you're never going to reach it. It's like the finish line that always is moving. You get to it and then it goes, because you can always do more. There's always the perfectionist. There's always the feeling that you could do more. It could be better. And then we never put anything out because nothing's ever good enough. And I think a lot of it, you know, it's so connected to failure and the fear of failure and what other people think all the time. But I think it goes hand in hand with that people pleasing. You're so concerned that you're going to put somebody else through a difficult feeling that you don't want to feel. So you don't want them to feel. So it is, I do agree with you. I think it is quite strongly linked, the whole perfectionism and people pleasing.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to do with empathy as well. And obviously it sounds like usually it's people that have been through maybe a lot of pain when they were younger or been hurt, that they have that awareness and they don't, you know, they treat others the way they would have wanted to treat their inner child. I think I read that somewhere as well.
Yes, but then that leads me to talk about the inner critic, because how strong did you find your inner critic as a young person?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it was definitely, she was definitely around and still can be. I notice it every now and then. And yeah, it's quite challenging being a businesswoman when you have a strong inner critic, because when you are running a business, you are all of a sudden in charge of so many areas and so many things can go wrong, and you realize that you can't be perfect at it all. And in your first few years in that journey, there's usually a lot that comes up. And that was when I dealt with my inner critic more than ever. That was around 7 years ago now for me. But I just remember those first few years just really working through some hard emotions and inner critic thoughts and chitter chatter.
And I would put my challenge in my teens down to the inner critic being so harsh and hurtful. And it's bizarre because we're so concerned about looking after everybody else's well-being, you know, as a people pleaser, but yet we're being so cruel to ourselves. And that's the thing that, you know, it just doesn't seem to line up, does it? How can somebody who cares so much about others be so harsh and hurtful to themselves? And that's, there's three things that people with depression do. And they are disconnected, they have a harsh, hurtful inner critic, and they're not following their heart's desire. So those three things together equals somebody who's struggling with depression. So they're definitely things to look at if you are struggling. You know, where is my life out of balance? What bits are missing? Because for me, it was mostly the inner critic was very loud. And so, you know, I'm trying to be kind to everybody else, but I'm so, so mean to myself. And that's why, as well, the parts work is so important, because how could I ever have harmony inside of myself when I'm constantly having a go at myself? You're not good enough. You know, the work's not good enough. You're not thin enough. You're not eating the right things. You're not clever enough. Who do you think you are? You know, it was endless and exhausting. And actually, if we ask that part, you know, what is it trying to do for us? And when we understand it's trying to save us from embarrassment and humiliation and doing, you know, fitting in, wanting to fit in is so important to a young person. And when we appreciate those things and we can say, okay, I realize now I can be kinder. Because the other thing, and I try and teach this to children, is nobody knows what you're saying to yourself. So it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're being cruel to yourself or kind to yourself, the next person doesn't know. So there's no worry about, is what I'm saying cool? Or am I fitting in with everybody else? Nobody needs to know. You can choose kind words. And the impact that that has on your life is so big, is so life-changing. Because for me, when I started being kinder to myself, my whole life changed in a positive way.
Wow. Yeah, I love that you are teaching this to children, and that is so impactful. And I also love the example that you just shared about like asking yourself those questions. And for me, I have learned that when we are being critical, and this is something that a previous guest on this episode has actually shared as well. She was sharing about how she feels her inner critic is on her right shoulder. And so she will actually anchor in on her left shoulder some really positive affirmations and positive feelings, and even talk to that inner critic and say like, hi, I notice that you're here. I acknowledge you for being here. Thank you. Thanking it, but also saying like, you're not needed. It's, you know, I know you're here to protect me, but you're actually not needed. And I think for the listeners, that's a really good practice to have. It's talking to that inner critic or that voice, acknowledging it, thanking it even, but maybe just letting it know that it's not welcome or it's not needed right now. Would that be like a nice start or practice for someone to get started with?
Absolutely. And the other thing that I want to mention is that our brains are hardwired to look for the negative. And that's from a survival mechanism. And if we understand that, we realize that we're completely normal, because that's really helpful to know that you're normal to have these negative thoughts, because our brain's scanning for danger. And that's how it stays alive. That's how we've evolved to all be, you know, in this generation. So unfortunately, we're still hardwired the same way. So while we haven't got the dangers that once were around, we are a lot safer now. We just need to understand that and then go, okay, so I have to work 10 times harder to be positive, because the negative's always going to be there. And just understanding that is so empowering, because it makes you feel you're normal, and that there is a way. You do have to consciously look for the positive as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And wire in that normality of being kind to yourself, because the brain is always drawn back to what is familiar. And if you have been harsh and critical to yourself for the last 20 years, it's going to take a lot of work to make kind and lovely thoughts stronger than these negative ones that you've been running for so many years.
Yeah, I feel like going back to people pleasing and, you know, this inner critic that we're talking about, I feel like all of it is rooted in a place of fear, and that ultimately, whether you're a perfectionist or a people pleaser or you have a strong inner critic, I think it might just come down to a fear of rejection or abandonment or conflict even, or being too much. Would you say that that's the case?
I totally agree. This is all, again, it's survival, isn't it? Getting the love that you're looking for, getting the recognition that you're looking for. And it's all built around fear of not being good enough generally.
Mm.
Yeah.
So is it time that we maybe start breaking free of those patterns as soon as we can and stop being stuck? And perhaps maybe if you could share with us like some things that we can do to distinguish between, say, for example, saying an authentic yes, which is like a full body, yes, I would like to dance with you, for example, or I would like to take on this extra project, versus being a people pleaser and not so authentic yes.
I think the first thing I would like to say to that is, whenever we want to change, it takes consistent daily actions. And we probably know that we've got a people-pleasing tendency, but how do I go about changing that? And I want to talk a little bit about the comfort zone, because we all get stuck in our comfort zone, and there's all these reasons for why our brain is drawn back to the familiar, even if the familiar is not a positive thing in your life. We're just afraid. You know, when we're in our lovely circle of comfort, we're basically surviving what we did yesterday. So our body knows if we survived doing what we did yesterday, it's safer to do yesterday again. Stepping out of comfort zone and doing something new, for example, being a little bit more abrupt with what we want to say when we want to say no to the dance partner, for example, you would start by doing the soft approach and doing the conversation that you would demonstrate where you're than you have been. But I'm hugely passionate about doing this work as early as possible, because the longer we stay in these negative cycles, the harder it is to break out of them. You know, we all know that, it's obvious, but we don't realize. I think understanding that we're doing these things and why we're doing these things is so powerful. Just giving you those insights about the comfort zone and being hardwired to look for negative. For me, the understanding is so empowering because it gives you a reason why. Okay, and now I know why I'm doing this, and I know why I'm scared to stand up in front of these people and do a pitch. It's for good reason. But we can then in that moment understand that stepping outside of our comfort zone equals growth and evolution. And while it's hard to do at first, when we are brave enough to take that step, the rewards are tenfold. So it's just taking those steps every day to prove to yourself you can change. I did design some. So while I help women in therapy, I also wanted to help children not fall into the patterns that we fell into. And so I have designed a card deck and a book. One is for 12 plus, the card deck is for 12 plus, and the book is for 5 to 10 year olds, to explain to them, teach them, they all have an inner team. And that if we get to know all the parts of our team and understand there are no bad parts, every single part of you is trying to do something to protect you or help you in some way, even if the behavior doesn't seem a positive thing. For example, you know, like OCD, we have people that are trying to control the world outside of them because they don't feel they can control the feelings that are going on inside of them. So it's all about learning about yourself and listening, because we're all so different and we all have different parts, and lots of them, and they all have something that they want to say and they want to be seen and validated, just like you and I.
Wow, that's perfect. And I'm just so glad to hear that this is being translated across to the younger generation, because I truly believe that if we all had access to this from a young age, the world would be a different place. I love that you're teaching self-compassion in kids. By the sounds of it, that's something that's going to really prevent. And I always believe in preventative rather than this now reactive or this after treatment.
Absolutely. You know, let's teach them how to befriend all the parts of themselves, and that equals self-compassion. You know, and if we can be much more compassionate about ourselves, it's only going to bring a positive effect on the rest of the world around us as well. Is it okay if I show you my product?
Absolutely, please. That would be lovely.
So this is the card deck.
Oh, so, in a team, how adorable.
So they're fun characters. And inside the card deck, there's a booklet, and it gives you instructions on each page about each of the characters and journal prompts that you can do on each of the cards. And then the cards are in different teams, and the yellow ones are all the facets of self, all the things we want to encourage in our life and build on. And then we've got the guardians, which are all basically trying to manage our world so that the wounded parts of ourselves are not felt. So these are the warrior, the critic, the mask wearer.
Wow.
The perfectionist.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, they're all in there.
Caretaker, the peacekeeper.
Yeah.
The striker. And then we have the reactors, which are reacting to difficult situations, the escapist, the hider, the soother, the rule breaker, the clowns, the hurter, something that, you know, we don't talk about enough, the exploder, the workaholic, and actually I missed a green one, the controller. I forgot to mention the controller. That's a very, very strong one. And then in the purple section, these are the wounded parts of ourselves that are hidden. and we shut down as deep as we can so that they don't get hurt anymore. These are like, you know, really wounded parts that don't want to be felt. And so all of these other ones are working to stop these being felt. And so we have the unlovable one, the sad one, the rejected one.
Yeah. And the ashamed one that you showed, that's a really, I mean, that is such a heavy emotion. And they say that out of all the emotions that we feel on the spectrum of emotions, shame is the lowest frequency and vibration. And it can cause such a ripple effect of low energy and self-criticism and despair. Maybe we can wrap up this episode
by talking
a little bit.
Yeah, so many addictions and the shame that goes with what's happening, but the addiction is only a protector part of you that's trying to help you survive a situation. There's always a wounded part beneath that that doesn't want to be felt. And so quite often it's a case of numbing out that feeling so it's not felt. The other thing to talk about with feelings is they all just want to be noticed. And while we're afraid to feel sometimes because it can be painful, sometimes the quickest way to healing is to just face it. And even just recognizing it and voicing it and saying, you know, I can see there's a part of me that feels sad because this happened. That's enough sometimes for that feeling to be recognized and then to subside. Whereas we tend to try and push everything down, like pushing a balloon underwater, and it's just going to come back up. So if you can recognize that looking is always going to be a quicker way through than ignoring it.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much. That's so profound. And yeah, I hope that this really helps the listeners to discover the first steps to breaking free from lifelong people pleasing. And obviously it's not a quick shift. It's a gradual unlearning. And I'm guessing it's something that takes years, not just months, but it's not something that we need to go, oh, I'm there now. I fixed it. Now I've graduated from the school of people pleasing, right? I'm guessing it's something that is lifelong and you don't have to feel like you have that pressure to get a certain place. It's just as long as we have gotten better each day. Would you say that's all right?
I would say the first thing to anybody that feels they have people-pleasing tendency is be kind to yourself with your progress, because every day is a new day. If we berate ourselves every time we go wrong, we're going backwards. We have to look at every step of the day that, yeah, I did all right. You know, okay, I wasn't perfect. But also saying things that are believable to your brain. If you say to yourself, I'm wonderful, I'm the best person in the world, your brain's going to say, whatever. Whereas if you say, okay, I did better than I tried really hard. I did my best today. That is believable. And that's the start to really the communication between you and yourself to go somewhere positive, because you really believe yourself and you start listening and caring about yourself. So every step is an important step on every day. And it doesn't matter if we go wrong. It's about, if you think about your favorite coach, they're encouraging, but they're also real. And that's the approach you need to have with yourself. Encourage yourself. And the changes in your life, I can tell you from personal experience, will be astronomical. Because once you start that wheel turning, it will get quicker and quicker and quicker. And you will find life just so much easier.
And I think that will also really change your relationships and impact the people around you as well.
Yeah, and finally realize your worth and that you are okay to take up space in the world. You deserve to be here. You were born, you were put in this planet for a reason, to start appreciating yourself and loving yourself the way that you have probably been desperate to feel for so many years. We give so much to everybody else, and just give yourself a little bit more of your own kindness.
Yes. Oh, I love that we have touched on that. Yeah. And I think this is a really, really great time for us to maybe this final last question that I have for you, which is, what is it that will start to shift when people stop people pleasing? What shifts first? Is it internal or external? And what are some of the ripple effects of doing this work?
I think the first step is be kind to yourself. I really do. Because then you start to realize that it's okay for you to say no, because you're starting to be compassionate towards yourself. And when you realize there's all these parts that are overworked and overstriving to tick all the boxes for everybody else, it's because you're not putting yourself first that you can't say no. Whereas when you are loving yourself and being kind to yourself, you are able to then hold space for yourself that actually, you know, the 10th task on the list is just one too many. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to say no today. Do you see what I mean? You have to bring the love to yourself first to be able to then say no to other people, because you realize just how important it is. Because if you are so depleted, you can't help everybody in a positive way. So sometimes you need to edit out a few things to be able to give yourself more love, and therefore you can help so many more people and be happy doing it. Because you do, essentially, as a people pleaser, you do love making other people happy. That is part of who you are. So it's just balance. I really believe that understanding is power, but balance is everything. You know, a little bit of everything in the right amount is what makes us happy humans.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful way of sharing that. Thank you so much. And to the listeners, how can we connect with you, Polly, and receive more of your amazing insights, and also get it for any of the parents or anyone that wants to get their hands of the resources that you have as well?
My website is theangelpath.com. If you're interested in the resources, you can navigate through the website and find it, but it's theangelpath.com/shop if you want to buy the resources. This is the book as well, which is 5 to 10 year olds. And in the back of the book, I have also created a chart that you can pull out and create your own cards. I'll show you here. Look, I made, just to show you, I laminated it. That's the card, the chart in the back of the book. And then it comes with a mini card deck. The little ones, so it's a version. But the idea is that you don't just read the story, you learn the concept by reading the story in the book, and then you use it daily with the characters, choosing your team, who you want to lead you on each day. And that way you've got a lovely dialogue going, not just for the child but also for the parents, because if you learn all about your inner team, you're becoming more comfortable and happy in yourself, it does create for a lovely, harmonious environment at home. So that's the idea, is I'm actually not just teaching the children, I'm teaching the parents too, and empowering everybody to be able to talk to their parts in a really kind, compassionate way. So that's the website. The book and the card deck are on there. And I would also say, obviously, you're in Australia, so for your viewers, you know, if you are interested, look into RTT in your area. I do work remotely, but the time zone is incredibly challenging for Australia. But if your listeners, where you are interested, look up RTT practitioner for rewiring those limiting beliefs that are holding you back. Because when you understand why you've been doing something, it gives you so much more power to change it. But yes, I work remotely. So if you're interested in working with me from a therapeutic standpoint, you can book a free consultation with me through my website as well. But Instagram, I'm at @theangelpath with _the_angel_path. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Polly Angel, and Facebook as well, The Angel Path and Polly Angel.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Polly. That was absolutely wonderful. So insightful. So, so much for us to take away from this episode. We dived into so many different areas, and I will be linking all those things that you've just mentioned in our show notes so that people can jump on your website and also, you know, purchase the resources that you have as well. Polly, thank you so much for what you have to offer and for what you bring to the world. And it's been such a delight having you on the show.
Thank you, Phoebe. It's been a real pleasure. I always love talking about all of this stuff because it is so close to my heart. So it's changed my life, and I would love it to change yours and your listeners. And because it's so empowering, because we can do this for ourselves. We don't actually need help doing this. Just let's learn to be kind to ourselves and watch the ripple of change that comes from it.
Absolutely. And I cannot wait to stay connected with you and also to see the difference that this makes on my journey and also to the journey of the listeners that are tuning in today. So once again, thank you. And to the listeners, thank you again for always tuning in to Inspire to Thrive and Shine. If you've enjoyed this episode, please make sure to leave a review or share this with your friends and your family and make sure that you get the word out there. And again, Polly, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Take care.
So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.